Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we talk about what hardware you really need to be a PC gamer, and can it run Crysis Remastered? I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain. Last episode, we talked in depth about the new RTX 30 series and what we knew. By the time that this episode comes out, the cards will be out and likely performance reviews, and everyone will be sad.
So sad, especially if you have a 2070 Super.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Darren was one of those late adopters for new technology or something.
Well, you know what they say. If you wait long enough, you will never buy.
And that brings up an interesting discussion about upgrading. When should you upgrade? Why should you upgrade? And how much money do you spend to upgrade? Because that is really the key proponent of PC building. You know, it's like, what do I buy? When do I buy it? And how much money can I spend to get this latest and greatest whatever?
Well, I think it is worth noting again that we are a PC enthusiast review site. Mm-hmm. And so we focus on the enthusiast level hardware mostly. And that's not always true because we try to sprinkle in some other fun things too.
Yeah, well, and there's excitement at the high end because that's where the latest technology is. That's where you can see a lot of the differences between a high-end card and one step down. Once you get into the lower-end components, you know, the ones that are inexpensive to buy, the performance becomes muddled, and there's a lot more competition in terms of, should I buy this card or one that gives me 3 more frames per second, and does 3 frames matter?
Well, I think it's worth asking, you know, what really do you need? Because I think, and this is the advice that we frequently give when we build PCs for folks or help people build their own PCs, and that is to start with price, right?
Mm-hmm. It's always about price, pure price.
You can't start with performance. I mean, it just doesn't work that way.
Well, it does for me.
Well, if money is not an object, right? And of course, if you're chasing, you know, hardware bot points, then you're in a different realm. And, you know, and this is maybe a good opportunity to compare enthusiast PCs to cars again, right? Because the hottest technology is always in those expensive supercars or the high-end Mercedes or whatever's out there. Maybe even the Teslas are driving it now. And then the price trickles down, and then the technology trickles down when the price of that technology gets cheaper. And before you know it, every car has a backup camera, for example.
And backup cameras are nice. I mean, you don't have to turn your head and be safe driving your vehicle, mm-hmm. right?
That's very true. But I think we have actually done a pretty good article when Call of Duty came out, the latest Call of Duty.
Yeah, we were looking at the system specs for Call of Duty, and we dreamed build, you know, based off of stuff that we could find on Newegg, and buying the minimum recommended specs.
Arguably, Call of Duty is the hottest game right now. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that's what you could look for as a benchmark in building your PC. And if I'm not mistaken, we'll put the link to that previous podcast in the notes, of course. Mm-hmm. We had to upgrade what we've said for years was that you could build a gaming PC for about $800. And it had stayed there for, I don't know, at least 5 years, it seems like, at that price point.
It seems like forever. And a simple search on YouTube will find any sort of tech tuber that will say, we can build a computer for $500. Well, no duh. You can build a computer for $200, but is it going to do anything? That's the question.
So using Call of Duty as our benchmark, we upgraded our system recommendations, and this is AMD and Intel, I might add, to about $1,000.
And that includes everything. So that gets you the operating system, which a lot of people forget about, and the basic hardware that you need to have a lasting computer that will give you some enjoyment and some speed and really be the PC.
So I'm going to tell you that I think we're wrong. $1,000 gaming PC isn't necessary anymore to be at least a mainstream gamer because...
Console. Yeah.
Exactly. Because the next generation consoles from PlayStation and Xbox are clocking in at right around $500. And I know there'll be a little variation in that price, mm-hmm. but that's a pretty solid price point from what we've seen announced.
Well, yeah. And the whole reason they can do that is because it's a locked hardware platform. We have, and we talked about this in a podcast where we looked at the different specs, you know, obviously before the consoles came out, and determined that they were basically the same machine with just some minor tweaks between the amount of memory that was available and how fast the video card was and the storage. But in a sense, they are a locked ecosystem. And they do that so that we can write games for that platform and expect them to run well.
One of the many reasons that people say PC gaming is dead. That closed infrastructure, Dennis.
It is that closed infrastructure. It is the closed infrastructure. And we want to blame lazy developers, right? Because they want to write four sets of code for, you know, Apple, PC, and the two console manufacturers. They want to write one code base and get as much ROI from it as possible, where we have the one game that gets released that goes and limits all of the PC gaming hardware because the game doesn't necessarily need it anymore. And that was something we had back in 2005, 2009 with, it started with Crysis, ironically enough.
Yeah. But I think it's worth pointing out that that's because of the ROI also. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's take Call of Duty, for example. I mean, this is a game that costs millions and millions of dollars. We should maybe even look.
We should look. Call of Duty development cost?
Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. For example, Call of Duty, according to the LA Times, and this is a 2014, this is the original Call of Duty, well, the Modern Warfare, mm-hmm. cost $50 million to produce. And the launch budget was around $200 million. It's $250 million, and that's just an estimate. Developing 2, 3, 5, 10 versions of that game doesn't make fiscal sense, even if the changes are minor. So, Dennis, I think that we have proven mm-hmm. that we can't build a gaming PC that we're comfortable with that will run Call of Duty for less than $1,000.
I would agree. I'd fully agree.
The PlayStation and Xbox folks do not agree because they will tell you that they can run Call of Duty on their $500-ish consoles.
At 4K.
At 4K or even 8K, perhaps.
Perhaps.
If they upscale it. According to Xbox and PlayStation 5, mm-hmm. which is a pretty large number of people, or will be.
Yeah.
We're wrong, Dennis. You can build an adequate gaming PC as a console mm-hmm. for around $500.
Yeah. And that severely contrasts building a gaming PC for $1,000. So, speaking from a pure price budget standpoint, I'm a new gamer.
Yes.
I have this PC that my parents bought me 5 years ago, and I can't even load Windows anymore. I have $500 to spend. What do I do? Do I upgrade this PC that's broken? Probably not. I'm going to go buy a PlayStation or an Xbox. And now all of a sudden we have a console gamer that's locked into that ecosystem because they didn't have a lot of money to the point where they could afford to do the PC side of things.
Oh, and Dennis, it's worse than that. It's the Apple model, because once you buy into an ecosystem, mm-hmm. and you own enough of that ecosystem, Apple users, then
yes.
you're less likely to leave that platform behind, because then you lose that investment and all that stuff that you bought is no longer compatible.
Yeah. Wasn't there an article out that said that there was like, 13 times PC gaming died this last decade?
Oh, no. So this is not a big surprise, because this is not the first time, and I'm sure it won't be the last time, that when a new console setup was announced, that they announced the death of PC gaming.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it, for that same reason that we just mentioned, we have that ecosystem. We have gamers upgrading, so we're going to get this latest console. Now, in this article, it kind of is spotty on what it is that they claim is the reason for PC gaming dying. But in 2009, a big side of things was the digital game sales and being able to pirate games, because you would buy a physical disc at the store and then you could copy it or get the CD key cheat so that you can run it without the CD and then pass it all over the internet.
Now, this is an interesting one, especially when you take consoles into account, because you have to buy games, or at least you did back in that era, mm-hmm. on physical disc for the console, but that is no longer true. And in fact, at least from the PlayStation angle, which is the ecosystem that I own,
yeah.
they really are trying to get you to not buy physical content by offering the digital content cheaper, sooner, and the upgrades are sometimes free.
Yeah, you buy the game 3 weeks before it comes out, and it slowly downloads to your machine so that it's available at launch day.
And they're offering free content if you pay for their subscriptions. And that's true across the board from every ecosystem, not just PlayStation, not just Xbox, but from a lot of the third-party systems, like Gathering of Games, GOG site, right? Free games, Epic, free games. Please be on our system. That's really the wave of the future, right? They try to bring you into their ecosystem and get you enough content that you're locked in.
Steam and Epic.
Yes.
Epic giving away games that were on Steam because they can give the developers more money.
Yeah. No. Okay. So that's very true, I think.
And one of the other items in here was, why would you buy a game on a laptop that's $5,000 when you can get X for much less? Again, it's a cost basis.
Well, I think that for a while we thought that people were migrating more to gaming laptops because the cost was coming down and they're so much more portable and it's a completely contained ecosystem. But the downside of that is similar to the console, right? You can't upgrade them easily and their used value is dramatic. I mean, we're talking worse than the aftermarket sales of a Pinto here. You know, you lose so much money when you buy one brand new. And most people hold on to them for a lot longer because of it.
That is very true. And they suffer because of it. That scenario where we had that Windows PC that didn't boot anymore, what do I buy? Well, that's the same problem. If the person doesn't have a vested interest in maintaining their PC or learning how to build the PC, there's no reason to. Because it's like, well, I don't want to learn this stuff, or I'm going to buy the wrong component. My friend actually had a water cooling loop explode and have a catastrophic failure in his living room. Well, he probably did something wrong.
Let's come back to that piracy angle again, because I think that we didn't really give that the justice. No. If you recall when Valve first came out, right, with the Steam platform, gamers were angry, right? Why would we buy virtual copies of our games? And why are they tied to these servers? We have to play only on official servers. Battlefield 5, for example.
Yep.
Right? Well, that is the counter argument to piracy. As we become more and more used to having virtual copies of our games and having them connect to the mothership in order to be able to play, piracy goes dramatically down. And in fact, on some of these games, it's near zero because you can't fool the game authenticator with a pirated copy. I wish the same could be said for cheaters, but,
Well, there's overlays and there's actually getting the stuff. Mm-hmm. So there is a major difference between the DRM and overlaying something as you're playing the game. So,
well, I feel like we've rapidly become a generation that doesn't expect to have physical media, and even more sadly, doesn't expect to ever be able to get any residual value out of a used game because you can't.
Yeah, it was really tough to sell games back in the day. It's like, hey, I just played Quake all the way through. I'm not going to play it anymore. Buy it from me for $5. Well, no, I could buy it for $5. Or I already downloaded it offline. So.
Well, and the same was true a little bit with console gaming. I mean, you would get the game and it might have codes in it for stuff that were used up.
Oh, yeah, that's another point. GameStop, right?
Oh, GameStop. You only have to look at GameStop. It's like the Blockbuster of our generation, right?
Yeah, so we have a $50 game that we bought, and we're trying to sell it as a used game a month later. They give you $2 and then turn around and sell it for $40. And it's like, it's a perfectly good game, but the fact that you already played it, now we're going to punish you for it.
Well, and I don't know about you, but when I see a used game, I'm very, very iffy about where I'm going to buy it, but I would absolutely never buy a used PC game. And I remember a time when you could walk into any computer store and buy a used copy of a game, and it wasn't a big deal.
There was actually a place here. This is, again, dating me, so I'm not going to disclose too many details, but there was a game rental store in Boise where you could go and rent a game for the weekend, just like you would rent a video. And you bring it home, and you could play it for a weekend, and you take it back. That was also before there was copy protection on a lot of these games. So you could go and rent it for $2 for a weekend, copy it, and then play as much as you want.
Right.
Well,
it's a good gig, but it's a dying business model.
Yeah, and that's why DRM is such a big deal. And on top of that, we have gaming on mobile phones, right?
True.
That allows you to do microtransactions extremely easy because you have to be logged into your phone to get a game out of the store. You get it for free, and then you can play to unlock things, or you can buy to unlock things. And you can't get out of that because there's no way to load that game on your phone, easily at least, without going through the store and having the DRM validate that that game is correct.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I feel like at least our children's generation will never remember a time where games didn't have in-game microtransactions or loot boxes or costumes or emotes or whatever.
I loaded up Quake for one of my nephews. He asked me if there were achievements.
No.
He didn't quite understand that it was get through the level as quickly as possible. Or
you can beat the game. That's an achievement.
That's an achievement, yeah.
It's not enough anymore.
But that is one thing. When we have games on Steam, we have these achievements that are locked to it because that ecosystem allows that to happen. You couldn't do that before because there was no ecosystem in place.
Yeah, in-game transactions, in-game microtransactions, in-game stores. And yeah. I don't even want to talk about loot boxes too much other than to say that I can't remember the last time there wasn't a game with some sort of loot box in it, so much to the point now that they're actually trying to legislate it as a form of gambling.
I see that as being a valid argument. Speaking of, though,
yeah,
if we pull back,
okay,
we talked about the PC and the console, and we're talking about this cost aspect of it. We have a Steam hardware, what's it called?
Well, they do a survey regularly.
We have the Steam survey.
And there's an active survey that comes out at least once a year, and then you can elect to share your hardware stuff with them, which I think a huge amount of users do. I don't remember the total number, but it's an insane amount of people.
I never knew that you could turn it off, but I thought it might be interesting to go out to the Steam survey, now that I know what it's called, and look to see what people are gaming on and see if there is really an argument between this cost aspect of computer games or computer hardware and if the console or the PC really makes a difference.
Well, this ought to be interesting because I would think that people would be running at least previous generation.
Well, we have, if we go down the list here, right?
All right.
OS, Windows 10. Well, Microsoft has done a really good job of making sure that everyone is on Windows 10.
Yeah, I like Windows 10, though. I get it. And this kind of goes back to our argument about consoles. It's easy to write for a console because you only have to plan around one operating system and one set of hardware. I think that that's why we're pushing so hard to be current on Windows, and that makes that much easier.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's in like, what, 86% or whatever?
Yeah, and that's kind of following the Apple model. We all knew that was coming. So,
and it's
yeah.
not bad. Windows 10 is much better than Windows 8, that's for sure.
And 64-bit, too. And I got to say, if you're not on Windows 10 64-bit, then you probably need to build a new PC and buy a new OS at one of the both of them, one of them. Yeah,
It's like $100. Memory. We have 16 gigabytes at 41% of all users have 16 gig of memory.
I have to tell you, this one was the biggest surprise for me because for so long, 8 gigs was what everybody recommended. But I know memory has come down dramatically in price. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why we're seeing this huge jump there in 16 being, 41.21%.
Yeah, and the 8 gigs is at 31%. So really, those are the two major ones, and we're assuming that we have dual channel systems here. And that's basically every modern processor.
But you could tie this back into Windows 10 too, because they recommended 8 gigs as well. So that's what you see most Windows 10 64-bit machines on. Not the minimum requirements, of course, but the recommended.
Oh, you mean Windows 7 at 8 and Windows 10 at 16?
Yes.
That's the one.
Yes.
It talks about Intel CPU speeds. This is basically the speed of the CPU, not whether or not it's an AMD or an Intel system. So that's a little annoying.
Well, and it's maybe a little bit misleading because you can have faster, older chipsets and slower, newer chipsets that perform better.
Yeah. And physical CPUs, we have basically 4 CPUs or a quad core. And the next biggest one, I think, was 6.
Yeah, that's interesting. 6. Now, of course, that's the modernization of the CPUs and the GPUs and the multi-core stuff coming on.
Yeah, well, if we consider that these machines are probably pretty old, just about every Intel CPU since Sandy Bridge was a quad core, even before that. And we had the Core i quads, right? And then we have the 6-core ones, which can be Intel, but is most likely an AMD processor.
Well, what's most interesting about this for me is the largest rise is the 6 CPU, which is telling me that a lot of folks are upgrading from those quad cores of the previous generation and grabbing the 6-core, which is kind of right in the sweet spot for price on the newer Intel processors.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that this is probably the AMD people. These are the folks on the Ryzens.
Yeah, and the same with the 8 is right there behind it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And here's the one that we really want to talk about. The video card description. At 200%, we have the NVIDIA RTX 2080 Ti. Not.
No, that would be super crazy. I'm glad this doesn't show data miners in it.
All right, so speaking of the 2080 Ti, let's find it on the list here.
Oh, we're really scrolling. There's a 2080 Super. There it is right there. Only
0.91%. 0.91% are on the latest RTX 20 series.
And right there with it is the regular 2080 at 0.96%. So only a tiny bit better.
Yeah, so what does that tell you about Steam gamers and high-end video cards?
Well, it would appear that they're all playing Candy Crush. Go back up to the top. What's number one?
Number one is the GeForce GTX 1060 at 10.75%.
Well, this category has the biggest fragmentation, which I guess makes sense since there are so many different video cards on the market.
Mm-hmm. So we should look at the top five. And look at these from a price perspective. So we have the 1060. That's a $350 GPU.
Right.
Next one at 7% is a 1050 Ti. And that is a very popular gaming card that we've never recommended because it's terrible. But it's also a $200 card.
But what I'm seeing there is a reaction to, I need a newer generation video card. What's the cheapest one?
Yes. Or I want a 1070, but all the miners took them.
Yeah, that's true. That was tough for a little bit.
Yeah.
However, you only have to drop down to 1050. Then the next one, so fourth place, is that 1070. Regular 1070.
Yeah, 3.6%, 8%.
So it's also important, I think, to point out that looking at this, it looks like you have to go at least 10 down before you hit one that's not an NVIDIA card.
Oh, yeah. What is this? Number eight is the first RTX card, and that's the 2060. Mm-hmm. And then the first AMD one is the RX 580 at 2%. Now, this particular card was in huge demand during the mining time. So anyone that happened to buy that card is probably holding on to it because they think it is worth more than gold.
Oh, yeah. And then right below that, we finally hit the 2070s. The 2070 Super at 1.97 mm-hmm. and the 2070 RTX Regular at 1.89.
And then we get, this one is really surprising, at around 20 spots down, Intel UHD Graphics 520. That's our Candy Crushers.
Oh, that is sad. These are the, could it be a tablet?
No. No, this would be a laptop.
Yeah, that's my work bought me a laptop. And
I'm going to play games on it?
I think so. I mean, especially with everybody working from home, I'm going to hang my hat on that.
Okay.
And that was actually the 620, not the 520. Oh, okay. The 520 is hovering way down there at 0.62%.
Okay.
So at least they're getting a decent one. Is that even possible to say about onboard graphics?
Well, Intel claims that you can play games on Intel graphics, and I suppose you can if you reduce the resolution and the details enough.
Well, and a topic for another time, but Intel has recently announced that they want to get back into the gaming video card market and compete against NVIDIA and AMD. Right. So that's coming. We'll see if they make it.
Yeah, they have the engineers to do that. The next ones, we have Vizio resolution, VRAM, multi-monitored resolution. We have a lot of 1920 by 1080, so 1080p screens.
Yeah, dominates. 65.55%.
We have dual screen 1080ps at 71%. So that's basically saying that nobody playing Steam games is at 4K. But that supports the video cards that are in here. In the top 20 was everything that was less than $350.
Which makes sense.
And then we have microphones, language, hard drive space. They actually capture a lot of information, which is pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
And then total hard drive space above 1 terabyte is in the 51 percentile. So we're still operating rotational drives for the most part.
well, maybe some of those folks have a 1 terabyte M.2 drive like me as their primary drive, and then they have a storage drive.
Would you spend more money on your SSD than you would your video card?
No.
All right then.
And you can buy a 1 terabyte hard drive now for like $39.
Yeah. Actually, you spend more money on the 1 terabyte than the 5.
But I feel like that's also supported by a lot of those older laptops, especially the early gaming adapter laptops that would have 1050s and 1060s in them.
Oh, that's true.
Gaming laptop, 1 terabyte drive. And it might be an SSD, but it's tiny.
In the big sense of the word, yeah. So we have the Steam survey that's basically saying that all, if not most of the gamers are very budget conscious. You know, we have machines here, you know, that 1060, that's a 5-year-old video card. And if they bought it when it was new, that machine is probably 5 years old.
Well, what this also shows, I think, is that gamers are voting with their wallet. There aren't as many enthusiasts as there used to be, which is kind of the same as there aren't as many people driving Ferraris, like we talked about sooner. We all really love them and probably dream about having one, but when reality strikes, you go out there and you buy a Honda, right?
So remember back in the day, there was a meme of sorts within the review community about, can it run Crysis?
Right, of course, because Crysis was so cutting edge at the time, and you know, you really determined how powerful your machine was by how well it ran Crysis. And this was the mainstream version of benchmarking, right? Because not everybody would benchmark in those days. So you wanted to run Crysis. It was the hot game. Did you have enough PC to run it well?
Well, and it was also kind of a guilt you into upgrading sort of situation, right?
Right.
So the game doesn't play well, so you need to have this hardware. And that was really where the reviewers got to dictate, say, you need to buy a Core 2 Quad instead of that Core 2 Duo that your mother gave you.
Upgrade, right? Now, I think it's interesting, though, because as fragmented as PC gaming has gotten since then, there hasn't really been that one unifying, you know, you need to run Warcraft or how well do you run Battlefield, because we don't really have that zeitgeist like we used to. That's the core game. However, I do know that they're remastering Crysis.
I heard a rumor like that.
Remastered Crysis. Maybe we are back again to, can your machine run Crysis? And we'll finally convince those folks that are sitting in those 1050s and 1060s to upgrade, right?
Well, I would hope so. It claims here on the Crysis webpage that it will be released on the 18th of September.
Now, of course, you'll be locked into the Epic system for this one.
Yeah, and you'll probably be listening to this podcast after it comes out.
So maybe you already have it and you'll know. But let's talk about it. If Crysis is the benchmark, or at least it used to be, what does it take today to say, yes, my machine runs Crysis?
Well,
in 8K, I see.
In 8K. So we go to epicgames.com and we're going to scroll down past the about the game and we're going to show some more here. Okay. Minimum system requirements.
All right. I want to see how well these align. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so we have Windows 10 64-bit, yes.
Well, winning.
We have the processor, the Intel Core i5 3450 or the AMD Ryzen 3.
How many cores?
That's like a quad core.
All right, so?
I think the Ryzen 3 is a hex core, but the Core i5 is definitely a quad core.
Well, that's a very affordable processor. Okay, well, this is just the minimum. Keep going.
8 gigs of memory.
Yeah.
You need 20 gigs of storage, so that's where that 1 terabyte comes in.
All right.
DirectX 11.
Still. Why are we not running DirectX 12? Well, I know the answer, right? Because those cards don't support it. Okay.
Speaking of those cards, we have the NVIDIA GeForce GTX 1050 Ti or the AMD Radeon 470.
Wow, that 1050 Ti sure hit the top of that Steam chart, didn't it?
And then they need to have at least 4 gigs of graphic memory for the 1080p resolution. Now, what does this look like comparatively to what we just discussed?
Wow, it's right there with what the
Steam survey
is. I mean, it's almost exactly there in every category.
So what would be the recommended specs? This is where we're going to say, hey, we need to unlock every potential.
Run everything at max settings, get all excited. Now, This has got to be at least a 2070 Super, right?
Well, I would hope. We need to have the latest update of Windows 10 64-bit.
Yeah,
I mean, whatever.
That's kind of a no-brainer.
Okay, so we have the Intel Core i5, 7600K, so at least it's overclockable.
Or higher.
Or higher, that's good. Or the AMD Ryzen 5 or higher.
I think it would always be higher. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
All right.
You need to have at least 12 gigs of memory. I don't see how you can get 12 gigs with a dual channel system.
Who buys 12 gigs of memory? Okay.
I mean, that's like we're putting together a mismatched dual channel system, and that's just dumb.
Quad 3 gig? No. Okay.
Well, I don't know. Triple channel? I don't know. You need to still have 20 gigs of storage, which is good.
Right.
DirectX 11.
Does that mean it's not going to support DirectX 12, I wonder?
Well, the videos up here kept talking about ray tracing and stuff, and you have to have DX 12 to do that.
Well, they also talked about 8K graphics, and I don't see that system running 8K.
Let's see. For graphics, though, we need the GeForce GTX 1660 Ti.
Wait a minute.
1660.
1660 Ti and 1050 Ti. All right, we're right back to the Steam again.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Well, at least the 1660 is the super low edition of the Turing GPU, or a cut down version of it. That was basically everything that was in the 20 series without the RTX crap.
Now, maybe we should stop because we have recommended the 1660 Ti before in reviews.
Yeah.
And who did we recommend it to? Entry level gamers.
Yeah. That's true. Entry-level gamers.
Yep. Good enough to play most games. We'll be able to play popular games at lower settings.
Yeah. Again, Steam survey.
Right.
And then we also have on the AMD side, we have the Vega 56. You know, I don't ever think I've seen a Vega card anywhere.
I don't know that I have either.
That's odd. But you need to have at least 8 gigs of graphics memory for 4K. So there's nothing about 8K in here, and there's nothing about DirectX 12. There's nothing about ray tracing, which you need the 20 series for.
And there's nothing about what I would consider high-end gaming software. It feels like even my PlayStation could run Crysis.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.